Welcome to the Better Wellbeing podcast series, brought to you by Legal & General Group Protection. I'm Suzanne Clarkson, an internal communication expert and founder of Coach House Communications. And in today's communication clinic, I'm going to look at the foundations of workplace wellbeing and at how storytelling is a social wellbeing superpower. More than 9 in 10 small to medium-sized companies, or SMEs, think that providing employees with social well-being is the most important aspect of health and well-being in the workplace. This is one of the key findings taken from the Legal & General Well-being at Work Barometer, an annual piece of research that aims to find out what employers and employees really want and need when it comes to well-being. It helps guide the organisation's thinking around the design of product, service and support for clients. So, what is social well-being and why is it important? To be honest, social well-being is pretty straightforward. We're social creatures and we need each other. That's the gist of it. Expanding on that a bit, social well-being is defined as the developing and sustaining of meaningful relationships. This gives us permission to be ourselves and to feel valued for it, providing a sense of connectedness and belonging. That word meaningful is really important. Meaningful relationships are grown on the back of getting to know colleagues on a deeper level, not just their professional background and skills. It's about people relating to each other, sharing glimpses of our personal lives. Eventually, our colleagues start asking about things we've told them, things like how our sick pet is doing. They notice if we're not there. We share the good times and the bad, help each other out and become friends. People don't connect with the rational. They connect with the relatable. There's even some solid science behind this. We all share a common part of the human brain, the limbic system. This part of the human brain is responsible for our desire to be with others, around others, and connected to others. It generates feelings of safety, happiness, and trust when we're with our tribe. Social well-being is also completely interrelated with physical and emotional well-being. So much so, in fact, that it's hard to make clear distinctions. And of course, all of this combined contributes to productivity, or not if the combination's lacking. Take me, for example. I run my own business, I'm a communication consultant to various companies, and I'm a one-woman band. I'm on the introverted side of the scale, I'd say. So I enjoy solitude, I enjoy getting into my own head. So in the same vein, I find public speaking, for example podcasts, a little stress-inducing. But I'm also fully aware that I run the risk of feeling socially isolated because I work from home, all alone. Social isolation is different to solitude. Solitude is a choice, social isolation isn't. It can lead to loneliness, which in turn can be incredibly damaging. I've learnt over the years that the thing that overcomes the potential for loneliness and that brings me work satisfaction, the thing that brings out my most creative and productive self, is feeling part of a team. And I get that feeling when I start relating with a client on a deeper, more meaningful level than just work. When I feel part of a team, I get feelings of safety, trust and value. These feelings are crucial for me to be able to contribute and challenge to do my best work. You might say then that an investment in social well-being is an investment in total well-being, ultimately an investment in productivity. So it should represent part of the foundations of a well-being culture in all organisations. As suggested by the word foundations, this is an under-the-surface layer thing. It's that mysterious thing we call culture. Traditionally, social well-being is equated with much more above-the-surface stuff, such as the annual work party, volunteering, formal celebrations, well-being Wednesdays, and even the attempt to create water cooler moments virtually. All of these initiatives have a place. They're all very rational. But people don't connect with the rational. They connect with the relatable. And when we relate, we're inspired and influenced. We gain purpose and meaning. We might even shift our mindsets and behaviours. All of the conventional above-the-surface stuff needs to be grounded in something much more solid, much more meaningful, more relatable, to help overcome problems that can arise when the foundations are lacking. Problems like cynicism from employees when policies, practices and leadership behaviour, all the foundational stuff, aren't giving out the same well-being messages. Perhaps also the inadvertent exclusion of your introverts in favour of your extroverts. and the risk of creating in-groups and out-groups when it's the same old people showing up. So how do you use employee communication to help support social well-being on a foundational, on a relatable level? There needs to be a combination of aspects, and they all largely stem from leadership communication and how it can create, or not, as the case may be, the conditions for employee voice, engagement and experience. I'll be looking at leadership communication in the next episode. But to get started with this today, with the one thing that has the potential to make the biggest difference, storytelling might just be your superpower. Stories are everywhere, in and out of work. And who doesn't love a good story? From the fictional, such as Jaws, Gladiator and Lord of the Rings, just a few of my personal faves, to the non-fictional, such as the England women's football team, the Lionesses, winning the Euros after years of struggling for recognition and equality in the sport. People don't connect with the rational, they connect with the relatable. And what makes stories so powerful is that they're relatable. They have the power to inspire and influence to shift mindsets and behaviours. Stories can help connect your workforce, bringing purpose, meaning and a feeling of being valued. But all too often, organisations communicate in facts and figures in a very rational way. This isn't what moves us. What moves us are shared experiences. It's for this reason that we all suddenly started feeling a great affinity with our leaders during the midst of the pandemic. They were communicating with staff directly and informally via homemade videos, often with the chaos of home in the background. The struggle was real and it was shared, and we loved our leaders for it. We were inspired and influenced by it. That's largely gone by the wayside due to the necessities of business. But it would be nice to think that some communication lessons were learnt from that. I see it in Legal & General's current campaign, L&G and Me, which includes short video interviews with people who've claimed on their company's group income protection. In one that sticks in my mind, a lady called Emma talks openly about a physical condition that severely affects her eyesight and the mental health knock-on effects of that. She describes the work and life struggle she faces and the fact that L&G was in her corner to get her the support she needed, including special equipment to help her work from home in the office. She also talks about the financial support. She explains that she'd have had to take a minimum wage job to make ends meet in spite of her failing sight, in the absence of the group income protection. What better way to communicate the benefits of this product? Much more effective than any factual brochure. People don't connect with the rational, they connect with the relatable. All stories share a simple structure. Whether it's Emma's story, or how I try to bring my best self to work, or even epics like Lord of the Rings, this structure typically includes four elements: characters, a conflict, a struggle, and a goal. There's science behind this too, behind why we love stories. Stories connect with us on an unconscious level. They connect with our innermost self, the parts of the human psyche that we still share with the animal kingdom. The parts associated with the preservation of the species, the instinctive need for food, drink and sleep. Also, the instinctive need to form social groups for self-protection and to pair off to reproduce, to tend to our young until they can look after themselves. These physical instincts are as automatic in humans as they are in animals. Where humans differ is in the conscious aspects of our psyche, our ego and differing personality types. So although we still have an instinctive need to obtain food, we've found countless different ways of going about this. Not many of us go out hunting, of course, but we might go to a supermarket, a farm shop, an online store. Although we have an instinctive need to form social groups, there are countless options, from sports and hobbies to working groups and networks. It's all these choices and different personality types that work to separate us from each other and from the animal kingdom. Human behaviour has, to a certain extent, broken free from the genetic mould. But that breaking free is far from total. We've survived this long by attempting to adhere to those basic instinctive patterns, despite all the choices facing us. Storytelling connects with this constant conflict in our psyche, a conflict between the instinctive and the ego. Or, to put it another way, trying to live life as an individual when all we really and unconsciously crave is unity of purpose, a feeling of wholeness. although saying that, this seems to have slipped more into conscious thinking in recent years. Stories hold up a mirror to this push and pull in the human psyche. They're full of tales of good and evil, dark and light, satisfactions and disappointments, happy and unhappy endings. All of it is played out in that basic structure. Characters, a conflict, a struggle, and a goal. And this basic structure has a multitude of applications in the workplace. From articulating your organisation's purpose, to demonstrating authenticity in your values and ESG credentials. Living and breathing all this in real-life behaviours via real-life stories that exist in you, your organisation and your people. I'd like to end with another little story, an everyday thing, the type of thing that might play out well in the workplace in trying to shift well-being mindsets and behaviours. It's the story of what motivates me to exercise. I have a personal trainer once a week. Sounds very la-di-da, but it really isn't. I've had the same personal trainer for around 10 years and I haven't stuck with him because he goes on about the benefits of fitness. You know, the type of thing, the rational argument, exercise is good for you, so do it. We all know that. But that rational argument doesn't make me emotionally engaged with the challenge. And it is a constant challenge. It doesn't motivate me to get up at 6:30 a.m. every Wednesday and throughout the darkness of winter to get my Lycra on. What makes me emotionally engaged is my personal trainer and the story of his struggle with fitness. The angels and the demons in his head. Here's a quick overview of his story. He first trained to be a chef and he did rather well, learning in some of the top restaurants in London. But it's a very competitive and stressful environment, that and the fact that it doesn't lend itself to a home and social life. He suffered from insomnia and was hooked on sleeping tablets and also hooked on eating. All of this led to depression, poor relationships, and lack of motivation. He took some time off work to soul search, and he decided not to go back to being a chef. His first goal then was to ditch the sleeping tablets by absolutely exhausting himself physically through exercise to help him sleep. Over time this worked, plus he started to feel fitter, stronger, healthier, and happier. It dawned on him that he could help others get out of their darkest moments with fitness. So he booked himself on a personal training course and the rest, as they say, is history. But those demons, the desire to find solace in food during the downtimes in life, to not bother exercising and to then face the consequences like insomnia, are always there for him, as they are for many of us. I can totally associate with all this and I love the fact that he's real, he's human. In fact, it's connecting with his conflict that motivates me. People don't connect with the rational. They connect with the relatable. And when we relate, we're inspired and influenced. We gain purpose and meaning. We might even shift our mindsets and behaviours. For a chance to win a day's internal communication consultancy, including follow-up actions and recommendations, enter our competition now. The competition is open to SMEs employing 50 to 250 employees. For more information, go to legalandgeneral.com/betterwellbeingcompetition.